God damn it. If you don't have a smile on your face after you hear that, there's something wrong with you. It's another edition of the Frotcast. It's here. We're live from the Frot Quarters in San Francisco. This is your Jewy motorcycle riding piece of fuck ear rapist Ben. And it's just a two-man frot tonight.
Just two guys, and we're having a good time. Having a good time. Having a good time.
That is stand-up comedian extraordinaire and part-time blogger Vincent Mancini.
God, I love... Thanks to Perry Grip for not officially giving us permission to use Space Unicorn as an intro song, but God damn, that is like the best song ever.
It really makes me happy.
It puts me in a good mood no matter what. I could, like, my mom could have just died, and I'd be like, aw, Space Unicorn, marshmallows.
Oh, just delivering hugs and rainbows all around the world.
Aw, sometimes I need to be delivered hugs.
And I usually get, like, getting delivered rainbows.
Well, that's true.
Whenever I get delivered...
you know how you take a rainbow, though, right?
No.
It's in your butt. It comes like a...
Oh, you go... Yeah, you go spread eagle.
It's like a suppository. Oh, missionary anal. Oh, it's like a missionary anal suppository of rainbows.
Of a rainbow. Uh-huh. I've never gone DR, double rainbow.
Oh, no, that's...
I'm not prepared for that.
I don't
that.
Have the equipment to handle that.
No, I'm not properly stretched for that. So we got, of course, another great episode show for you this week. We're going to bring Burnsy on for Burnsy's Corner, and I'm going to unleash some rage for him not letting me know about I'm on crack. That really disappoints me that didn't come from Burnsy.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm a little sad by that. We're not going to talk about Drive, even though Vince and I did see the official Film Drunk premiere last night.
I was thinking we could save it for next week, and then everybody will see it, and then it'll be like a conversation that they can pretend have with us.
They can listen and then yell
yes
into the air.
That's what I do when I listen to it. On the occasion that I do re-listen to our broadcast, I just yell stuff at myself for not saying things that I should have said after
fucking
the fact.
Idiot.
Yeah.
Well, just so you listeners know, Drive gets five yarmulkes. Well, at least 4.5 yarmulkes. Which is a high.
That's high.
That is
well,
high.
But it's not out of 9 like a menorah, is it?
No, it's not. It's out of 5.
Okay.
5 yarmulkes would be you get a menorah if you get 5 yarmulkes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would highly recommend it. For all of you fraudketeers out there, definitely see it. I really enjoyed it.
Although if you're dating a girl who's not like super cool, probably the worst date movie ever.
Or if you're dating a girl that you don't really like that much, but you just want to see a cool movie.
Yeah.
And you don't want to get sucked into seeing, like, I don't even know the names of the rom-coms coming out right now. But you could be like, hey, Baby Goose is in it. You saw The Notebook, didn't you, baby? Yeah, it's him. He's in The Notebook, right?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he is.
The most famous romantic movie of all time.
Oh, him.
So you could be like, hey, Baby Goose is in it. Let's go.
Him and Rachel McAdams. God, they were just the cutest.
Oh, my God. Cutie patooties everywhere. But, yeah, I would highly recommend it. No joke. I really, really enjoyed it. One of the more enjoyable movies I've seen in a while. Really well done. But yeah, if you either, just be warned, if you are on a date night, be warned that the lady friend you're with might not enjoy it, but maybe that's a good thing.
As long as she's cool with people getting their skulls crushed, it should be fine.
And like stabbed in the neck, you know, standard operating procedure when you drive for a living.
Hey, it's a standard operating procedure. Hey,
you got a lot of WAP jokes these days, don't you?
Why you steal a Papa's a cabbage? What? How am I gonna?
What? How come you're not?
Who's gonna pay for all of this cabbage?
How come you don't randomly break into Woptimus Prime during your stand-up routines?
I don't know.
So
I have a lot of voices that I don't really know how to integrate.
So have you guys seen this? Have you heard about this?
Hey, hey, hey! Mama's cabbage is all—it's all soggy.
Yeah, that's good. I'll take that into consideration.
Yeah, I think you'd really shake it up.
I could. Oh, also, so I also interviewed Eddie from Shut Up Little Man, which is a pretty cool ass documentary that I will hopefully have a review.
It's an ass documentary?
Yes, it is. I'll hopefully have a review of that up tomorrow. Maybe not. That would be Friday. But anyway, it's a pretty cool documentary about these guys that were living in San Francisco in 1987, and they had a couple of really drunk, odd couple-ish neighbors that would just shout crazy things at each other at all hours of the night, and they recorded them, and it became sort of this viral sensation in the days before the internet and before computers, just based on people sharing tapes. There's a lot of weird references to Shut Up Little Man in pop culture that I never knew existed until I saw the movie, like in the Patton Oswalt bit when he's doing that, the Black Angus bit, and when he's like, and look and bend over, Abigail May, because here comes the gravy pipe. Abigail May was actually a reference to something one of the Shut Up Little Man guys said in the Shut Up Little Man tapes. So anyway, it's just a documentary about that whole phenomenon. Pretty interesting.
So that's in the age before the internet. So it was like the days of scrambled spice.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Oh, yeah. That was like, I mean, we're talking jacking off to body paint in Sports Illustrated
oh,
days.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Elle McPherson, what's up?
Oh, hell yeah.
Holler.
And, you know, just the early days of Heidi Klum.
Yep. She was there. She was there. Kathy Ireland was there. Mm-hmm. Christie Brinkley.
You know,
was
I was never a fan
on.
Of, I mean, I'm not saying I wasn't a fan, but there's a certain look that, like, Kathy Ireland has, and I kind of think Denise Richards had, where they have this weird, like,
almost
cheesy look to them. I don't know how to describe it.
It almost looks like their face is fake.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like like their created doll.
Yeah. Yeah, they have, like, a weird button nose and, like, those... I don't know how to describe it. It's just there's something cheesy about them.
Well, and then also you hear them talk, and that doesn't help.
Well, I don't care about that. I mean...
Well, I'm just saying it doesn't help.
Yeah, no, it doesn't
help. Elle McPherson was always top-notch.
Yeah, she's up there.
Yeah.
And she was pretty pretty liberal with showing off a kit.
She was pretty liberal with the wet t-shirt contest?
Yeah, yeah, stuff like that.
She was really good at those.
Oh, well, who isn't? It's hard to lose one of those.
I've won so many fucking wet t-shirt contests. You guys have no idea out there. Vince, you did want to read some emails, didn't you?
Well, let's get Burnsy on. We'll do the emails in the middle. We got some... let's get to the fun stuff first.
All right, well, let's get into Burnsy's corner.
Let's
his corner.
Get all up in there and just hollow it out.
Yeah, let's hollow out his corner. What's in it? What else is in his...
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, guys.
Hi, I'm trying to reach Burnsy's corner.
This is Vince Mancini from the Film Drunk Frotcast. I was just calling for Mayor Burnsy.
Is this a telemarketing call?
No.
I got nothing else then.
That's cool.
That was a good bit.
Yeah, we're good at improv.
That's why I want to write for Saturday Night Live.
Yes, and I'm not a telemarketer. Yes, and also, not only that, but... Also, there's an Italian guy here. Hey, who stole my cabbage?
You're a smell-a-marketer.
Yeah, you played the number one rule of improv so well. Are you a telemarketer? Uh-huh. No.
I don't know what to say. I just get flustered and I just say no to everything.
Wait, you're not a telemarketer? Nope. Second City, here you guys come.
You know what? We are where we are right now. A spaceship.
No, we're not.
Yeah, it's good improv.
Burnsy, first of all, Burnsy, I've got a bone to pick with you.
All right.
Why didn't you introduce us to the I'm on Crack song?
What's the I'm on Crack song?
Oh, my God. It's got over a million views on YouTube. The kids are, it's all the rage.
It's a pretty good
song.
If it's
not over a million views, I'm not going to watch it.
Oh, that's true. You go under 10 and under only.
Here's a little clip of that. It's about Asian people loving golf.
Burnsy, I think
like you...
Song's pretty good, but it's more of a visual thing. There's like cats dancing.
It's actually
explosions.
A pretty cool video.
It was a very cool video.
I'm always really impressed when they there's cats in tuxedos or suits. Burnsy, I think you'd be a big fan.
I like the way it sounded.
Yeah, but Burnsy, you did send me this clip the headline is Mike Tyson doesn't think Glenn Rice banged Sarah Palin hard enough. And
that was my first thought when I heard that Glenn Rice and Sarah Palin had a one night affair of passion.
Glenn Rice is just so unassuming. It's so boring.
Yeah, well,
it's a fantastic story, but
is it really? Because I don't know. My first react until I saw the actual headline, which was fantastic. Thank you for that. Until I saw the actual headline, my first knee jerk reaction was, God, are we still talking about this fucking cunt? Like. What does she do? She doesn't do anything.
She
got elected governor of a state with like 50 people in it, and then she quit after a year, and now she's still famous for some reason. I don't know why, and I can't stand
it. Well, she simply represents everything that makes me angry about my own country, America.
Yeah, she likes to pander to
even her big jugs.
Well, I like that. That does represent all the best
Come
things.
On, I don't hate 100% of the woman.
Well, all right, 96. How much? What percentage are her boobs? You think?
I'd say like 12%.
All right, so we're 88%.
That's a good percentage. If for any girls out there listening, you want your body to be at least, you want to be like under 20% body fat, but at least, you know, 8 to 12% boobs.
That's a good ratio.
Yeah,
10% boobage is fantastic.
Yeah, according to Mayor Bernsey, that is optimum boob percentage.
I am a certified boobologist.
Yeah, you started studying all those toddlers and tiaras, girls. It's like, come here, Eden. Let me tell you something.
Eden, get over here.
God, give it up on Eden already. We're on Paisley now.
Paisley, ooh, we got to stuff that. We got a story about her later, but first.
Oh, we got a story later? Okay. I need to keep up to date.
But Liz, we got to hear Mike Tyson talking about Sarah Palin.
Oh, it's an audio
Glenn
clip?
Rice. Oh, yes.
Oh, booyah.
That guy's in cocaine. Did you see this Sarah Palin story?
Oh, man, can you imagine? But no, you know, Glenn Rice is a very, he's a wonderful man. You know, he's just a wonderful guy. You want her to be with somebody like Rodney, and you're digging up and you get up in there and you push your guts up in the back of her head, right? You want Rodney in there, you know, Glenn Rice is a nice, mellow, docile, black man, non-threatening guy. You want somebody like Rodney, yeah, baby, let's get that donkey in here now. Let's go get it.
Get that what?
Get that donkey in here now.
I like, and I quote, let's push her guts up into the back of her head.
I also like the idea that because Glenn Rice is docile that he must not be hung, even though he's like a 6'9" black dude.
Well, I don't know if it was as much about being hung as much as just pounding it out.
Yeah.
Like Glenn Rice, he's suggesting, would not pound her guts into the back of her head.
He might only pound her guts into her,
like into her lungs,
into her
or
abdomen.
Something.
Yeah, yeah, like
he's a lovemaker, not a womb shifter,
not a gut blaster.
Oh yeah, is that? That's oh yeah. There's some other transcripts. In life in general, you know, everybody got to get that out of their system when they get out of college. If you're a black man, every white girl, every uppity middle class, everybody got to get their share of love. Yeah.
So I like how you're saying it with just a tinge of accent.
Well, I was just reading the words page.
That's how Vince felt in college, too.
Yeah.
Coming from Fresno, he's like, I got to get all these white uppity bitches.
No, it's more like, whoa, Jews? I've never seen these before.
Sir. Where's your small hat?
Seriously, I'd met my dad worked at a junior college teacher, so he knew one other teacher that was Jewish, and that was the only Jewish person I'd ever met. And then I came to college, and then in my suite there was like 9 people in it, and 6 of them were Jewish. And I was like, holy shit! I mean, I knew the concept, but I've heard of you, but.
To see meet you in person, this is weird.
It was like having heard of Eskimos, and then suddenly, like, you live in an igloo.
There's just a gigantic menorah you cross under every day.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That shit'll blow your mind.
Bernsey does know about that because he lives in Florida.
Well, there's only certain parts.
Jews everywhere. It's awesome.
Well, there's certain parts of Florida. It's not every part of Florida.
But that's the old ones. I've heard they get less covetous as they age.
Well, they just don't like the swampland, and they don't like the white trash very much.
Yeah.
Jews have avoided the white trash-ism, the white trash culture.
And yet, you move to Florida, and when you get old, what's up with that?
It's the weather, bro.
All right.
Good weather. Bernsey, good weather.
It's the best weather.
Well, that's debatable, but it's good.
Oh, it's good. Oh, it's good. No, you're good. Yeah, that's good. Oh, that was... Well, Glenn, 6'8".
I lose my career.
You climbed the ladder, baby.
Yeah.
Okay. But just imagine paddling with a big old black stallion ripping. Ripping. Yeah! You know, he's ripping old sailing. And I listen, most of those girls, like the most of them, in life in general, you know, everybody, you've been with a black woman before, right?
Yes.
Everybody got to get that out of their system when they get out of college. Like, if you're a black man, every white girl, you know, uppity middle class, corporate owner's daughter, got to get me a black man before I go prosper in this white world. You know, out of black and white. Of course, we got to get some of that peak cheeks before we go back in together. Everybody got to get their share of love.
I like how he's like, I'm not going to lose my career now, am I? It's like, I'm pretty sure you got convicted of rape. That didn't do it.
Well,
I'm surprised he didn't curse once.
Yeah, that's true.
What was that, by the way?
Larry Brown Sports, some sort of podcast.
There was an interview on Gridlock on an ESPN radio station.
That's what that was from?
Yeah, it's one of those, you know, afternoon sports talk guys.
Yeah.
They were brilliant enough to have Mike Tyson on to ask him about Sarah Palin having sex with Glenn Rice.
Yeah,
that is a pretty good call on their part, I got to say.
How do you not ask Mike Tyson about that?
That should be the number one person that anyone would call.
Before anyone. He should have written the entire book.
No, I would ask Mike Tyson and Jesse Jane on
Twitter. Oh, God! So
oh, my God! You can't blame me! Oh, my God! It's so good!
It'd be sort of like that.
Yeah.
Or Lupe Fiasco. Or
oh, Lupe Fiasco!
It's like Lupe Money, or what was her name?
Oh, she smells like money.
I must shower off the money.
Yeah. So, Bernsey, how about this senior spelling bee?
This is classic Florida stuff right here.
Did you attend this live? Did you actually record?
No, God, if I had known about it, I would have gone to it.
You think you could bet on a senior spelling bee?
I would have found a way to do it.
Do you think? I'm actually a little disappointed you weren't a judge. Oh, I love the ads.
Yeah, there's an ad. Yeah.
Oh, it's got pre-roll.
I was really upset because my friend who's a reporter for the NBC station that covered it didn't even tell me about it because I would have gone down there.
Do you think you could have been? Awesome. You think you could have wrangled your way as a judge?
I would have pulled every string possible.
Oh man, someone would have gummed your jeans off.
They would have spilled their prune juice on my pants.
Senior spelling bee at Southwest Focal Point Community Center in Pembroke Pines.
IMPATIENTLY.
There are 15 contestants, ages 68 to 92.
Frank, your word is injunction.
Injection?
Injunction.
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 They might have had difficulty hearing some of the words.
Hydroxide.
I lost.
But not spelling them.
F-U-N-E-R-E-A-L. A-B-S-O-L-U-T-I-O-N.
Thank you.
They really make a 90-year-old spell funereal? That's fucked up. spell decrepit.
They made him spell flaccid.
Oh, that's mean.
Your word is Viagra.
Well, that's easy.
Whoa, that was at the beginning.
All right.
God damn it.
He's probably just throwing footballs through a tire swing when he heard that one.
Yeah, he was. What age, Bernsey, what's the minimum age for this? I think I might apply next year.
She said it was 68.
Fuck. Well, yeah. No, she said it ranged from 68.
Well, I'm sure you got to live in the old folks' home that they do it at.
Well, that's a small price to pay. I can handle that.
We could be roomies.
Yeah, you want to? Let's do it.
Let's get bunk beds.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yo, you know what they say is that STDs are rampant in old folks' homes.
Yeah, but why would you bag it up? It's like, man, if I get AIDS, that is not going to kill me for like at least 20 years.
It'd be pretty quick.
No.
Yeah.
Come on. If you contracted HIV when you're 85,
well,
you
just steal everyone's medicine.
The problem would be more that once you get that case of pneumonia, not only would you be fucked without AIDS, once you have AIDS, it's just you'd be dead in like 25 minutes.
Yeah, but you got that old lady puss, son.
Yeah, and you're living in an old folks' home. There's nurses there 24/7.
Yeah, your life would be you'd be good, I think.
Just a big old fuck fest at the senior home, in between spelling bees, of course.
But Bernsey, back to Paisley.
Wait, so introduce me to Paisley. I'm intrigued.
Paisley is the 3-year-old. Who's mom? We played the short clip last time.
Her, oh, she was, Julia Roberts?
Yes, ooh. Yes, she was.
So she's a sensation now.
She's
well,
a new star. She has ousted Eden from the high chair of
from the garden
tiaras.
From the garden of Eden.
She's the fresh face. She's the fresh face at nap time.
So Bernsey, this is a serious question. What age do these child beauty pageant girls, what sort of, like, you know, in the NFL, you're running back, you turn 30, it's all downhill. At what age do these girls, is it all downhill for their career? Is it like 4.5?
For these girls, yeah, it's like 5 maybe.
So 5, and then once you, like the day you turn 5, you're...
Then they're just not sexy anymore.
their little boobs start sagging? How does it work? What's the first...
Taking its toll.
Yeah, what's the first sign, you know, like a running back will blow out his knee, what's the first sign that a girl, it's, you know, turning 5 has just lost her magic of the runway?
It's got to be the mosquito bumps.
What do they change? They get bigger, smaller?
I don't know.
Oh, I think you do.
This is making me uncomfortable.
I think you're holding out on us.
Yeah, I don't think you should hold out this information on us.
Bernsie, you're the expert. You're the resident. You're the broadcast expert.
I am, but there's just some things I don't want to talk about.
Bernsie, have you seen a new show called, it's like Dance Girls or something?
No, Dance Moms.
Yes.
Is that a real show?
It is a real show. It's girls trying to be dancers in Hollywood, though. So this is on the other coast from you. And there's one main sort of, I don't know, sort of pig-looking woman, I would say. She's very hideous and scary-looking. And she's sort of dominant. She's the coach lady that yells at everyone. I think you'd like it.
I'm going to have to check it out after I'm done with League of Extraordinary Dancers.
So Paisley's mom is supposedly in hiding after receiving death threats. Wendy Dickey has been forced to go into hiding after receiving death threats following her daughter Paisley's appearance on the Toddlers and Tiaras show and the outrage it caused. Dickey told Good Morning America that the outfit was not meant to sexualize her daughter and was intended as a joke. The whole idea was for people to see the comedy behind it, she said. It's like when you take your children to a kids' movie. There's always adult humor that the parents get that the children don't get, and that's what it was about. Dickey was from Georgia, designed the outfit herself, and said she's outraged that people think she's sexualizing her toddler daughter. She agreed pedophiles were everywhere, but unlikely to be at toddler pageants, where most of the audience were mothers and other women. She said, when you take your children to the beach, you put swimsuits on your girls, bikinis on your little ones, or your big ones, or teenagers. I want to see some bikinis on my big ones.
I don't even know what that means.
I think there are just as many or more pedophiles at the beach and in the park and anywhere. I do not believe pageants are a breeding ground for pedophiles.
When I looked around in the crowd, I saw only 3 to 4 older gentlemen rubbing their hands in their pants. That is the exact same number I see at the dog park, at the normal park, at the beach, or at the children's playground. Same number.
Bernsie, what is your experience with pedophiles at the beach? Tell us about it.
I don't go to the beach much anymore because of that.
Did you have a couple bad experiences?
Yeah, I'm not allowed at the beach.
Oh, are you allowed at these pageants?
Of course.
Oh, because
they're safe there. They're being supervised by their parents, so I'm allowed to be there.
And by you, right?
Absolutely.
Have you judged any recently?
No, it's been about a year.
Oh man,
what would you base the judging on? Is it like how big they smile? I mean. How much cleavage? What do you look for? What do you look for in a mini pageant tot?
Oh, I've never done one of those before.
Oh, really?
No, I've only like girls who are 18 and up.
Oh, so these? Do you think these require special training?
Absolutely.
Is it like Starbucks where you go? You know, if you work at Starbucks, you have to go to some special class where they teach you how to taste the coffee and describe it. It's kind of like wine tasting.
Do they seriously do that at Starbucks?
They do, yeah.
Did you know Vince worked at Starbucks for how long? About 48 hours?
No, 6 months.
6 months?
Yeah.
His favorite part was getting there at like 5 in the morning.
Yeah. One time, I'd get
up all night drinking and go in?
Well, I'd get there a little bit early sometimes, and I had to open a lot because I refused to. I refused to close. So that meant I had to open like a few days, and you know, opening at Starbucks was like 4:30 in the morning or something ridiculous like that. And sometimes, you know, depending on traffic, I'd get there early. Like I might get there 10 minutes early, at which point I'd eke out the last 10 minutes of sleep before I went in. And
in your car?
Yeah, in my car. And a couple times I would just fall asleep. And like one time it was like 5:45. You know, I was a full hour and 15 minutes late.
But because, in front of the Starbucks.
Yeah, just sleeping in front of the... And my manager, his line was, Vince, it's called Starbucks, not Carbucks.
Oh, Oh, man, nailed you to the wall.
Yeah, he did. He got me. God. Got me good.
He owned you.
Yeah.
And now go make some Frappuccinos.
Yeah, I did that. I worked there right when they started the Frappuccino Light, and people would come in and they'd be like, what's in the Frappuccino Light? And I'm like, I don't know. It comes in a plastic bag that I get out of a box in the back. What do you think's in the Frappuccinos? It's a different plastic bag. Well, how should I know?
Well, what's the difference?
One is lighter.
But what's in it?
Tears of the Unborn.
Oh, okay, I'll take two.
Yeah.
I love Tears of the Unborn. By the way, that's difficult to harvest.
So Starbucks customers are surprisingly oblivious to being fucked with, I found. Like, they would just not pick up on things that you say. Like, we had a big, you know, they'd have the big promotional posters behind the counter. And I remember some woman came in, she's like, what's that? She's pointing at the poster. I go, that's a poster. And she didn't say anything. And it was the same thing with, like, what's in the Frappuccino Light? I'm like, I don't know, space-age polymers? And they don't say anything. It's weird. There's something about going into a coffee shop that just makes you immune to, I don't know, to being life? Fucked with, I guess.
I love space-age polymers.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Those taste really good. Is that what makes it light?
It is. That's how it's lighter than air.
Because of space age polymers.
It's kind of like styrofoam, but it's edible.
Edible styrofoam? Yeah. I've always wanted to eat styrofoam.
Yeah, it's a useful, versatile material.
Every time I burn styrofoam, it always just makes me want to eat it when it just sort of melts.
Oh, you can also dissolve it in gasoline. Boom. Fucking napalm.
Huh. I'm in. That? You can dissolve styrofoam in gasoline?
Yes, that's true. That's true.
That seems like something that you would do at least once a week in Fresno, if not more.
Twice a month.
Did you have a class? Was there a class in high school?
No, you just discover things. When you got enough gas, you learn what stuff dissolves in it, where you can pour it. You know, how big
of a fireball?
What
you
happens
can make?
When you shoot a garbage bag full of it with a gun?
What happens?
It just leaks. But if you throw a match in there, then it explodes.
Then it's a party.
That's right. Burnsy knows.
Burnsy played with gasoline in Florida.
I sure did.
Burnsy, what else is in your corner?
I got a hell of a song of the week, and it's dedicated to you guys.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if I like this one. It's more visual, but I'll go with it.
Hold on.
Yeah,
hold
like,
on.
See, the visual part is what I dedicate to you guys, because it's what I imagine it looks like on where you guys are right now.
Burnsy, 3.5 million views. What the fuck?
I wanted to bring you a big one.
All right. Well, I
that's what he said.
And she said too?
Mm-hmm. So it's by Caswell. It's called Ice Cream Truck. The video's got a guy in a pink Yankees hat, and he's sucking on an Otter Pop. So that's what he's doing. Now he's sucking on a... There's a lot of different popsicles.
Meet me at the ice cream truck. I'll buy you an ice cream. I'll whip up my drumstick. That will make your eyes gleam. Lick it up quick before it melts on the floor. I got it. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro. Give me some more. Okay. Meet me at the ice cream truck. I'll buy you an ice cream. I can test up my luck. You can play up my
I love
my
the gangster
cheek.
Looking
Let
gay guys.
Banana split on the dance floor. Got it. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro. Give me some more. Okay, I met him at the schoolyard round quarter to three. We went out for cheap.
I've noticed that gay guys have this thing where they really want like stubble on the face, but then a hairless body. I don't know if that's a contradiction or not.
Well, it's just a style thing. Burnsy, this video has a lot of oil on the chest.
I guess that's what they like.
I tried to get the hair out of my butthole once.
Oh, man, what? That had to have been a painful experience.
It wasn't too bad.
What was the process? What was the hair removal technique?
Well, I'm not proud of this, but I used Nair.
Your butthole?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put Nair anywhere near my butthole. What was the result?
Oh, no, that part was fine. I mean, it got the hair off fine. It felt, you know, no.
Did you use regular Nair or Nair for men?
They have Nair for men?
Yeah,
it's butthole specific.
It makes a world of difference.
Is it pH balanced for me?
For your butthole?
I don't know, but it says
I can't believe you put Nair. Anything. I can't believe you put Nair around your butthole. Genitalia.
I did, and it was fine. That part was fine. I got the hair off good. But the thing, well, because see, the reason I did it is because when you're wiping, A lot of the times you get the little pieces of toilet paper stuck in your butt. Like
it's called a dingleberry.
Yeah, these really coarse butthole hairs.
Everyone knows what dingleberries are, bro.
It's like trying to get it's like trying to get peanut butter out of a Brillo pad with paper. It doesn't work so good sometimes.
No, not always.
So I wanted to experiment. So I nared it off. The problem with that though is you don't realize what a sweat catcher hair actually is.
So you were just a slimy mess.
Oh, I just had slimy crack. There's just so much slime crack. I felt like I needed to put like a maxi pad in there or something, because I don't know, and it's like I don't want to ruin my underwear by giving myself that credit card. But
so did you have to go like just rolled up pair of boxers in the crack and then normal boxers? You were on a two boxer a day habit.
Yeah. I don't wear boxers. That's
boxer briefs, whatever,
boxer
bro.
Boxer briefs. Yeah.
Well, you took maybe some old briefs. Shove that in the slime crack. I can't believe you slimed yourself like that.
I slime cracked myself for a good two weeks.
So was that the next day? You're like, damn it.
I was like, this was a mistake.
This was a. I instantly regret naring my own butt. That was not the best way to remove the hair.
Yeah, I don't know if girls just get used to that, or just girls don't sweat in their butts.
Well, I would say they probably don't sweat quite. Girls don't sweat quite as much. Period.
Yeah,
I don't think they grow as much hair back there either.
Oh, they do.
Maybe you're.
If there's a girl that has as much hair in their butt as me, I'd be scared of.
Oh,
them.
Not as much as me, but
Italians.
Well, that's Vince.
I've seen girls that.
The female version of Vince is going to have a lot of hair in her ass crack.
True.
I'm not very hairy. I'm the least hairy Italian Armenian that you'll ever meet. But I do have.
You can't even grow a beard, Bernsey.
I can't. It takes me.
I get like nasty chin hair and then like nothing cheek high.
It took me 8 weeks, and at the end I had like this orangey.
It looked, Bernsey. You've seen Team America, right?
It
looked sort of like that, but red hair. Yeah.
And then I put some Just for Men on it to darken it up, and then it looked like I had actual facial hair. But I had to cut it into a Fu Manchu because that was like the only places that it would grow. Everywhere else was just
Patch City.
Yeah,
just splotchy.
Patch Adams.
Yeah, splotchy. Oh man.
But yeah, so for any of you guys out there, if you're thinking about narrowing your cornhole, make sure you are not a sweaty man. I will say this: I'm one of the sweatier dudes that I know, so that could be an issue.
Oh, I would just be, anytime I got up, if I did that, I would just, there'd just be a pool of sweat.
Yeah.
Anytime I stood up.
Well, it's more of a swath.
A line. It would be a line.
Yeah. Like a protractor.
Yeah. Like a ruler. It'd just be like a ruler of sweat on the chair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever experimented with butt hair removal?
I have one time.
I have not done it. I've always thought it would be a big mistake.
It's terrible. I mean, it's common sense that it's bad, but still, like,
you got to. I guess some people have to try it once. So you did it once. What was
like? Hey, I wonder what it would be like if I had no hair on my butthole. And then you try it.
So
like,
what was your hair removal technique?
I used Nair.
Did you really?
Yeah.
So we have two men who nared their butt.
Maybe it's a blogger thing.
Yeah, I think that's it. That's the first thing they asked.
So was your experience similar to mine?
I just remember it being so damn itchy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So your butthole is itchier than it normally is.
Oh, yeah. And I had a rash on both my cheeks.
Ooh. See, I'm pretty itchy normally. Like, I feel like some days I need one of those dog cone things around my cornhole because I'm scratching it so much.
Yes.
How would that even work, though?
I don't know. It'd be hard to sit.
But how would that stop you from itching your butt?
Well, because you couldn't be able to, like, the cone would be out so far that you could.
It's a huge cone.
Yeah, it's just a really big cone.
We're talking like wedding dress size. Like the gypsy wedding dresses. Yeah. So it's like,
oh,
that.
Oh, God, I need to start recording that show.
Oh, you never watched it?
I still haven't.
Oh, it is fascinating.
I keep forgetting. God.
I would think Burnsy might be familiar with my big gypsy wedding.
I haven't watched it.
Oh, dear God. I would recommend it. Probably only a couple episodes is all you need because they're all similar.
I'm really scared of gypsies, though.
You should be, for good reason. They call themselves travelers, by the way, not gypsies. Mm-hmm. But Yeah, they wear crazy wedding dresses, like the huge ones that go out really far.
Yeah.
So you could maybe attach that to your butt.
Well, I watched that documentary, Knuckle, and the funniest part was, like, the whole movie, you're sitting there wondering, what the hell do these people actually do for a living? How do any of these people have money? Because they're all betting, like, 60,000 pounds on these, like, bare-knuckle boxing matches that they hold literally in the middle of a fucking street, like out in the middle of nowhere in England.
If there was a fuck giving contest,
they would get last because they do not give any fucks. And
they have never given a fuck out.
The one scene they show where this guy was supposedly doing a job was they were removing one of those posts. You know how you put those posts there, like in front of a sidewalk that's wide enough for a car, you put those posts there so people don't drive up it. I don't know if they'd been hired to remove this post, but the dude comes and he just backs his van into it until it like knocks it sideways, and then
they pick it up.
And this other gypsy guy like takes two shovelfuls, and the other guys take it off, and he sits back down on the hitch of the van and smokes a cigarette. It took him like 5 seconds.
Job well done.
And that was a whole day of work.
Pretty good job well done. Let's go bet on the boxing. I think they collect a lot of scrap metal. Seriously, something like that.
They
collect a lot of random scrap metal and resell it.
That's fun.
Yeah, that's really
fun.
There
are travelers in America, aren't they? Aren't there?
Well, travelers are very specific to Ireland and England.
But there are gypsy clans in North America.
I think they're called transients? Yeah, I think they're called hobos.
No, like actual like hereditary.
Guys with sticks with those little bundles on the end of them?
That's winos, bro.
No, they're hobos.
Okay,
yeah,
they prefer
hobo.
Yeah. A wino, I guess, is a less transient hobo.
I do like that when we were kids, sometimes the really lazy Halloween costume was dressing up like a bum. That always cracked me up. Yeah.
Dirty face.
And then you get
bandana.
Bandana with the stick on it. Yeah. Or the stick with the bandana. And this is where I got all my shit. I don't even have money for a backpack.
That is not a very good impression of a little kid. Farkas is where I got all my shit. Hey. Fucking damn god shit, cunt.
Hey, Vince, I like your Superman outfit. Do you like my stick with all my fake clothes in this little handkerchief? That's all I got.
Your parents are poor.
It's funny. I'm dressing like your parents used to act. Burns, do you have any other songs for us?
No.
Oh, do you want me to do the Drunk Man Loves the Constitution?
I really like Drunk Man a lot.
I haven't watched this one yet. Is it any good? Better
it's
be.
Pretty good.
What's going on here? Any intro?
This guy's getting arrested, and he's really drunk, and he starts screaming about the Constitution, and it's a really good one.
Oh, it's from the Colbert Report. I'll tell you, I did want to play this. Did you see the improv fest where everybody was like up in arms about the rape guy?
The rape guy?
He's the guy that rapes. He raped so many people.
This guy told a story. I'll play you the clip, but it's at this UCB festival thing, and this guy told a story that's it sounds like it could be rapey.
Today is Mickey Rourke's 55th birthday.
That's good. So this clip is from this UCB. It's called Ass Cat, which is like a improv monologue sort of thing, and this guy's in front of a huge auditorium filled with, like, I don't know, 5,000-6,000 people, and he gives this monologue. It's kind of long, but it's interesting, and people were quite up in arms about the rapiness of it.
The tone?
Yeah, you'll hear.
Right on over to the other mic to win big. Okay.
There we go. Nice.
Okay, so I used to be a host at Second City Chicago, and I used to cook there. I used to be the cook in the kitchen. And,
Wait a minute. Did you just say, I used to be the host, I used to be the cook?
Well, yeah. Well, now, hosting includes, like, cooking dishes, sitting the people. But at the time I was cooking, I was the fry cook there. Mm-hmm. And one day when I was cooking, one of my buddies who was hosting, seating people, he was like, oh, man, there's this really old drunk girl, and like she's really hitting on me, man. It's so crazy. She wants me bad. I'm like, oh, cool, man, cool. So, so So at the end of the night, when we're all cleaned up and done, he was like, dude, I got her number, man. I'm like, oh, you gotta, you know, go over to her place because that's what she wanted. And and he's like, I got a girlfriend. Why don't you do it?
Yeah. Let's all write down where we see where this is going.
So peer pressure happened. And
so I think the concept of this whole thing is like an improvised monologue, or they're supposed to like, it's like an improv exercise where you like tell a story, but then you sort of, you know, you tell a good story.
Is this
basically
a random person, or is this?
Yeah, it's just some dude who like jumped on the mic at this big festival.
How did you find this thing?
It was kind of a big deal on the internet. A few people sent it to me.
I like how you internet people always tell. I'm like, where did you find this thing? It was a pretty big deal on the internet.
Yeah, like, Twitter. People tweeting about it.
Fucking, it was trending for like over 18 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay? It trended for like, yeah.
He gave me her number, and I was like, you know, they wouldn't let me leave their site unless I did something about it. So I call this girl, and without saying like, hey, I'm a different person, is this okay?
This isn't the girl who just told the last monologue,
no.
Is it?
So I call her up. She's like, hey, I'm like, I'm coming over, okay? She's like, all right. I thought that was good enough. And I'm like, fine, I did it, you know, whatever. I'll probably just go home. They'll never know. And I'm like, still, guys, I can't go. I don't have any money for a cab. I'm broke. And everybody starts pitching in $5 and everything like that for the cab.
One thing I do enjoy about this is that everybody's up in arms about, like, this guy's some frat boy date rapist, and he's, like, the fruitiest theater dude you've ever seen.
Why does it get later? Does it get to the point where it's like, and then she's like, who are you? And I was like, shut up, bitch.
Well, you'll see.
Cab ride. I'm like, okay, cool. You know, I have the hotel where she's at. I think it was a Four Seasons. I'm not sure. So I hop into a cab. I look like a mess, too. Like, my hair's messed up. I only had my work clothes, so it's basically like a greasy Second City shirt and everything. And I walk into the hotel room. I'm pretty sure everybody there is like, what's this guy doing? So I get to her hotel room. I knock on the door, and she opens up the door and goes, oh, no.
She says to you, oh, no?
Yeah. And I try to play it cool. She's like, you're not the guy I wanted. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm the guy who showed up.
Burnsy, you totally used that line.
I just wrote it down.
So she's like, well, I'm not letting you in. I'm like, oh, really? Because I came all the way over here. You're not going to let me in? I'm like, my friend said this was a sure deal.
Not as romantic as the first thing you said.
What? Sorry. She's like, I'm not letting you in. I'm like, oh, man. You know, I'm like, now I have to call him and tell him this? I'm like, but I don't have his number. She's like, I got it. I'll give it to you. So she goes into her room to get the thing, and she leaves the door open. So I'm like, bingo.
Wait, she what?
So here's where it's getting kind of creepy, barging in her hotel room.
And then I turned around, and I locked the door, and I said, "Bitch, put this tape over your own mouth."
She left the.
She went in. Oh. I know that there is a Fifth Amendment. You do not have to keep.
So I walk in there, and I kind of close the door.
And you said bingo.
I didn't say bingo. I thought
Can
bingo.
I ask you a question.
Yeah.
Was this woman attractive?
She can be a chooser, apparently.
This is not how bingo is played, by the way. And this does not normally happen at Second City.
So I get in there. She gives me her number and everything like that. And I text my friend. I'm like, I don't think it's going to happen. And then she was like, you really got to go. And then like I was like, all right, it's now or never. So...
This is crazy. I don't know what he said. I don't know.
During the course of this, two police officers just showed up. You've been warned.
And this whole time, I'm holding a shovel.
I played out this scenario in my head hundreds of times before.
So I'm like, Eric, you gotta make your move. So I'm like, I don't think you want me to go. She's like, yeah, dude. I'm like, no, you don't. So I go in for the kiss. I don't force it, but I, you know.
No, you're not forcing it. No. You've just been asked to leave three times.
Say the rest of the story very carefully.
Start every sentence with, if hypothetically.
Allegedly, I.
Well, I'm pretty sure she felt pretty safe because we ended up on the bed. We were just making out. And she's like, you're gonna have to go. I'm like, really? And like, she's like, yeah. And she's kind of got me pinned down. And she.
Classic safety sign.
Well, she ended up being stronger than me.
Hey, when that happens, that's why you get the toddlers and tiara girls.
Some of those chicks are fucking buff.
Well, they're flexible.
Not strong?
No, not usually strong.
So I couldn't get up. So, you know, we start making out more, and then again I go, all right, you know, time to take it to the next level.
I'm just going to tell you, behind you, I see multiple women going like this.
He's shaking his head, in case you're wondering.
I was wondering.
Yeah.
Next level.
And so,
Horatio
flicking their beans.
Horatio Sands is actually one of the guys on stage, interestingly enough, I think.
Does he weigh like 60 pounds?
Is he dressed like Elton John?
Those are the two weirdest questions I've ever heard in my life in relation to Horatio Sands.
I thought he did an Elton John impersonation.
Does
on
he?
The news.
Really?
Maybe not.
I don't know.
The way I tell my friends a story, I say it. So,
the way I tell my friends.
Well, this part of the story. I say,
the way my lawyers advise me to tell the story.
I say, I went for the fish hook.
I went for the fish hook.
He's describing fingering her now.
What?
Which is my way of, like, you know, saying finger blast or something, the fish hook.
I have to apologize to the first guy. His story was great. Good job, Leo. There's not a woman in this theater who could resist you right now.
So you give her the fish hook.
And after that, the deal was pretty much in the bag. She was like, at least tell me you have a condom, which I did. And,
because the condoms that you have on you are always quality condoms.
So she's like, you know, you have a condom. I'm like, yeah. So, I put it on. And she takes off her pants. And I went to take off her top. And she's like, no, this is going to be quick and dirty. So we have sex in her hotel room, and that was pretty much it. We had sex and it was over, and it was okay sex. She didn't want to do anything special or anything. It was...
She refused to fondle my balls after, which, big faux pas.
Yeah. Clearly.
I mean, she wouldn't even near my butt when we were done.
She was all slimy. It was weird.
She wouldn't near my butt.
She laid on her...
Yes, she already got the fish hook.
She laid on her back and, you know, I did my work.
There's people behind you doing, like, takes from Bonville.
The audience is going for the gong.
It's okay, though, because, like, after we were done, she's like, now get out of here. And
then you,
thought, time to take it to the next level.
So anyway.
That's it?
Well, now, I don't know. There was like...
That was
this,
long.
This prompted pretty much shitstorm of like outrage, being like, oh
from
my
who?
God, he's a rapist and blah, blah, blah.
That's what every guy at the end of the night, if he... I don't know. I have zero outrage for that.
Well, I mean, I understand. I don't know. I get no means no when it comes to sex, but when it's like no means, or when it leave my hotel room and he stays there, he's definitely being a creepy weirdo, but I don't think that qualifies as being.
She's not screaming.
A rapist.
She's like, all right, fine, let's make out. All right, you can finger blast me. All right, slap a condom on. All right, yeah. Now you have to leave.
I mean, it could have been different than that. Than the way he described it. But the way he described it doesn't scream like, oh my God, this dude fucking raped me.
Yeah, I mean, I could just make up a story right now that sounds a lot worse than that. That wasn't that bad.
Burnsy?
I mean, I lived in a fraternity house for like 6 years. Like, nothing about that even fazed me.
Was it the last 7 years of the six of your last 8 years of college?
Yes, because I went to college for 8 years.
Nice work, buddy. I'm jealous.
It was. I miss it so much. And hearing that story, I was like, oh, that's cute. I miss college.
Yeah, there's zero. I mean, I am not very easily offended, but I also didn't find that very funny.
Yeah, well, I didn't find it. Well, the guy was a creepo for sure. I'll say that. But all right. So this is what like the person on Splitsider was like. I was in the audience for that show, and I have a lot of thoughts in all caps and feelings about what an incident like this means for the comedy community and how it was handled. What this guy did and what, if anything, the woman in the story can do about it is a matter for the authorities. I hope that doesn't seem like an utter cop-out, though maybe that's what it is. For the purpose of blah, blah, blah. As an audience, let me just say that this story filled me with a creeping dread. There is something so surreal about watching someone reveal something dark about themselves with a seeming total lack of self-awareness and with utter glee.
But I don't understand. It's not... I don't know. It doesn't seem anything that ridiculous to me.
I don't understand why she would contact authorities.
I've heard...
I mean, I think any time...
Maybe not more molesty or rapey stories, but I've heard way crazier things than that that have gone on with people that I know times a lot.
I mean, I think everybody was laughing along because they were expecting like the punchline along the lines of like, and then she pooped the bed.
Yeah, they're expecting a punchline and not
a fucked her, bro. I'm a creepy dude who got some.
Yeah, yeah, but I don't know. It's just I feel like it cheapens rape when everybody's like, well,
is
don't
that,
you think
is that your concern here?
Well, don't you think it's? I mean, like that's kind of a big deal. It's not like a something to say lightly where it's like,
no, not
like
at
rape
all,
is different than like. Shooting, it's different than a girl being like, this guy's fucking annoying, but I'm gonna bone him anyway, so he goes away.
She was completely in control. She could have been like, no, fucking
well,
leave.
Yeah, according to what he, I mean, it could have been different than the way he described it for sure.
For all we know, like, it didn't even happen, period.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
it was probably Eden.
No, it's Pheromone. What's her name?
Pheromone. Wow.
What's the new one?
Paisley. She's a pattern. How do you forget that?
I don't know.
How do you forget something like that?
I will instantly forget about that guy's story. I can't believe that made the internets.
It was like I said, there was quite a bit of outrage for that.
Well, but
I feel like we should save our outrage for, you know, more deserving things.
Well, I mean, that is a completely different issue. America's outrage is usually spent on things that do not need outraging.
Everybody knows a guy who's not a rapist, but he does that thing where he just like he corners a girl and he like talk rapes her until she just sort of you know.
I've known plenty.
It's like salesman. Like being a salesman requires that you power through someone else's. You know, you can tell the other person it doesn't want what you're selling right away, but you just sort of power through it because that's what salesmen do. I know a lot of guys whose game is like that, where they just sort of talk at a girl until she eventually loses the will to resist, and she's just like, okay.
I know a lot of guys like that.
Yeah.
That's how I got my girlfriend.
You just talk them down until they're like,
And you slip in some like degrading comments and make them feel bad about themselves, and boom, you're in.
Done and done. Dating by Burnsy.
Man,
like,
this...
You understand what I'm talking about. You're fat. And then she's like, oh my God, I am.
This has turned into a Tucker Max cast real fast.
The MaxCast?
No, we're not saying bro nearly enough.
True, true.
Or dude.
This week I asked people for their stories about awkward laughs in movie theaters.
Bernsey, did we discuss this with you last week?
We did, and I still can't remember my most... I think the only one that I can really think of is when I saw Up.
Yeah.
What part made you laugh?
That incredibly depressing opening 20 minutes of the movie.
I think it was like
and
actually...
I just started laughing out of... How, like, I just, it was disbelief that I couldn't believe how depressing the first 20 minutes of that movie was.
Yeah.
And I was just laughing so hard.
Yeah, it kind of, it kind of,
theater full of kids.
It did kind of bug me how hard they were trying to make me cry and Up.
Well, especially to open the movie.
Yeah.
There was definitely, Burns, Vince and I saw Drive last night, which he will not talk about tonight.
No, I'm okay with that. I don't know. I figure we'd wait till next week.
It's cool, bro.
Then people may have had a chance to see it.
But there's definitely...
Yeah, I would like to see Baby Goose first. Thank you.
Oh, man. I would recommend it. Go see it. But there's definitely some scenes in there where we
laughed. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of awkward laughs in that one.
Yeah. But no, there was no turning around from people.
No.
But although there was an awesome part, completely unrelated to the movie, where it was really quiet. And this one guy turns around, he's like, "Stop fucking kicking my chair!" to some guy behind him.
I was telling Ben that happens in every press screening that I've been to.
Really?
Well, yeah, because it's all shut-ins and people like at halfway houses mixed with like smarmy film critics. And it's just a powder keg in there.
It was so amazing. Just at the silent part of the movie, this guy out of the blue, you know. I don't know that I've ever heard that, honestly, in any movie I've ever been to. Just a scream of...
Really?
Yeah, because I've been annoyed, and you know, sometimes you'll turn around and just give the glare.
Yeah.
Which usually is enough, but I've never heard the audible "stop kicking my fucking" or "stop kicking my chair" from some weird old guy to another weird old guy.
Yeah. Well, all right, so awkward laughs. There was strangely quite a bit of overlap in your guys' story. The first overlap was Twister. Larry says, in Twister, the movie begins with Helen Hunt flashing back to her childhood where her father gets killed by a tornado. They show the family cowering in an old-timey farm cellar in the backyard where the super skinny father tries to hold the door closed while the obese mother looks on with concern. My friend says, they got the wrong person on that door. Me, awkward laugh. And then another person says, when Twister came out, my girlfriend at the time dragged me to see it. At the beginning of the movie, Helen Hunt's character, as a child, is huddled in a storm shelter with her family. Her father's trying to hold the storm door shut, which rattles uncontrollably, bursts off its hinges, and the father is sucked up into the storm to his demise. Funniest thing I ever saw. I cackled loudly in the crowded theater for a good 2 minutes. Unfortunately, I was the only one laughing. I did not get laid that day. Also, a lot of our best emails end with, I did not get laid that day.
Well, that's how people sign. That has nothing to do with the email. It's just like, I did not get that laid that day, comma, Tim Mike.
Yeah. Some people feel compelled to tell us that they did something that they heard on the broadcast and it did not get them laid. And we never promised that it would get you laid. I just want to point that out. But so, yeah, there was overlap on the Twister stories. I thought that was funny. And another overlap.
So as multiple people emailed you specifically that Twister made them awkwardly laugh?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. And even more oddly was two people emailed us about Irreversible.
What?
Which is not a very big movie. I haven't actually seen
it. Was
that
a movie that was released into the theaters?
It is.
Who was in it?
That's a terrible name for a movie. Yeah.
It was it's Gaspar Noé.
I do not speak Eskimo.
He's the guy who did what the fuck is that movie? Enter the Void. I haven't seen any of his movies yet, but people know of him.
They know of him.
Up and coming.
They don't know him, but they know of him.
Yeah. So someone was talking about being at a film festival where that director was introducing this movie. This is from Argentino, from Buenos Aires. Gaspar was at the screening and talked a bit before the film. He went on to say that in France, where he's from, people didn't laugh at the movie because the French are pretentious assholes. And when he showed it in Morocco, people laughed hard at the right parts, like when the protagonist loses the baby. And by now, you might have guessed that I like marginal humor since I like the Fraudcast and read the blog. So when he said that, I was pumped. I'm thinking, let's get this hilarious movie going. Move along, Kevin James. Here comes the new comedic genius. And then you watch the film, and spoiler, that particular joke he referred to where he loses the baby, he doesn't misplace it like in The Hangover. No, he's tired of taking shit by his wife, so he kicks his awful wife in her 8 months pregnant belly till she has a miscarriage. Then goes on to have consensual sex with his teenage daughter. If you watched Irreversible, you know that he is no comedic genius. He shatters your soul, then he takes a shit on your empty carcass. And the funny thing was, one of the emails that almost directly followed that email was from someone, John, saying, I got so uncomfortable during the rape scene in Irreversible that I started laughing. And then when I realized I was laughing, I laughed harder, to where the point where my friend got up to go to the bathroom, and then when he came back, he sat somewhere else.
That is amazing. I have never heard of that before.
Impressive. Yeah, I enjoyed
I've
that.
I've never heard of that. That is amazing. I gotta go pee / move seats. I really enjoyed that. Was that from Mike Tim or Tim Mike?
That was from Devo on the site. That's his username.
Oh.
It's
not Argentina?
No. Well, Argentino was a different one. That was the first one telling us about the scene. And then another one, yeah. This other one comes from Alex. This is kind of an opposite one, where I was the only person that didn't laugh in the theater. I was a kid watching Platoon in Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic. Remember that harrowing scene in the village and that excruciating moment when Tom Berenger shoots the old woman? Well, the entire theater erupted in hysterical laughter, like they'd just seen a Wayans brother do a pratfall. I thought that was funny because I had a similar experience when I watched Boys in the Hood.
Which part?
Well, I watched that in the mall in Fresno. It was the mall that white people used to go to, that mall.
Until Boys in the Hood.
you know the old famous Chris Rock bit where he's like, every town's got two malls. There's the one white people go to and then the one white people used to go to.
It's true.
Yeah.
Especially in Fresno.
Yeah. Well, we got a few of those.
X malls?
And it was that scene at the end where they find... I think it's Ice Cube. They track down the guy who killed one of their buddies, and he's just like, he shoots him in the leg, and the guy's like crawling across the parking lot.
And then Ice Cube shoots him
in
the back.
He tracks him down, and he like shoots him in the head, like from point blank. And I remember in the theater, like the fucking theater erupted in applause and like cheering. It was kind of disturbing.
And then you slowly meandered out the back?
Yeah. Like, I don't even know if you remember Boys in the Hood, but that was like...
Oh, yeah, I do.
There's people shooting at the screen when that shit came out.
Yeah, there's gang fights and stuff, like, or whatever. There's shooting. There were people got shot during screenings of that movie.
Yeah, which is weird, because it's a pretty cheesy movie if you watch it now.
Gets you all riled up, but it makes you want to shoot people.
I don't know.
Burns you? And then Ice Cube gets in a Winnebago and takes the kids across country.
Yeah, that was the sequel.
Dude, wasn't that Martin?
I went, maybe 8 or 9 years ago. I went to, I don't remember what the first movie I was, and then it was the second Martin Lawrence stand-up movie was in the theater, yeah. And I just went to sneak into that to see it. No joke, sold out. I just snuck in and sat down. I think I was the only white person in the entire theater. Sold out Martin Lawrence stand-up movie.
Yeah.
Blew my mind. I didn't know that happened.
Yeah.
It was like there were people that walked in with girlfriends and had to leave because there weren't two seats together.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The thing goes run, tell that.
I don't want to sound like the racist guy here because...
Just be the rapist, not the racist.
Because I think of different periods of my life in terms of the corresponding Chris Rock special. And, you know, I love Pryor and Dave Chappelle. But man, I've never gotten Martin Lawrence. Like I've never gotten it. His comedy has always been just kind of annoying and unfunny to me. Like he's so animated, but then he's working so hard, and there's just like sweat dripping off of him. And like
he's always wearing leather clothes too.
Yeah, and even
leather ensemble.
Even Cat Williams, I think, is genuinely pretty funny a lot of the time. But fucking Martin, I don't know. I hated his show. I never liked
his show. Was really bad.
I don't know. I never got him.
That's because you're white and from Fresno, bro.
I guess. Burnsy?
What, you didn't like Shanae?
Yeah, come on, dude.
I liked it when Jamie Foxx did it on A Living Color.
You didn't like it when he played five different characters on a show?
No. No. It was weird that he's kind of he's Eddie Murphy's Lady Gaga.
I remember seeing his stand-up movie when I was a teenager, and I haven't seen it since then. I think I only saw it the one time, but I think if I watched it again, I would probably hate it. But I remember having fond memories of it the same way I had like fond memories of the House Party movies.
Well, House Party is awesome.
The main memory I have of the House Party movie or movies is when the guy gets stuck under the people having sex under the bed. No?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
my favorite part was when he has to do a report and, you know, the smart girl's trying to help him do his report. And she's like, oh, just
kid or play.
Which one's which? The one without the big hair?
Yeah, that's all I know.
And she's like related to something you know, and so he like describes it.
Oh, no, you're talking about Class Act now.
Oh, really?
Oh, fuck, you son of a
that's,
bitch.
That's Blade Brown and Hillary from Fresh Prince.
You son of a bitch,
oh,
man.
I suck.
You cannot confuse Class Act and House Party.
I apologize.
Well, House Party 1 or 2. Was there a House Party? I think there was a House
There's
Party.
There's like two. House Party 5.
Dude, Brett Ratner is trying to reboot House Party. Or
yeah,
that was
like
is that true?
That is a real story from like about a year ago.
Well, if they get Kid in play, that'd be really good.
Yeah. All right, so I got
that's
another.
Have Nick Cannon.
I got another email. This is from Andrew.
Not Tim Mike?
No. The fellas and I decided to venture to the nearest multiplex to enjoy the most recent of Tarantino's films, Kill Bill Volume 1. As the film opens, there is a scene where the bride is shot in the head and blood splatters all over the ground in deep black and white. I remember seeing this scene. I was really high when I saw that, and it fucking... Oh, man. That scene kicked my ass. Do not watch that when you're high.
Well, especially if you're Vince, who you smoke weed, what, a couple times a year at best?
Yeah, once every few months.
Yeah.
As the film opens, oh, yeah. Blood spatters all over the ground in deep black and white. As the sound drops out from Nancy Sinatra's Bang Bang, or whatever the fuck song is called, there is a scream from the back of the theater from a child who could not be more than 5, who says, and I quote, "I'm sad," in the most pathetic voice possible. I turn to see that not only is the child about 5, but her 400-pound mother looks furious as she is trying to calm the child from crying. Fighting the urge to laugh at the crying child and barf on the wildebeest mother, I turn to the screen. Not 2 minutes later, the earth shakes as the mother yanks the child out of the theater, saying, "You can never behave yourself."
I could never take you into another R-rated movie, you little son of a bitch.
So that was fun. What are you doing over there?
Got crickets back in the
what
home.
What is he doing?
What is he? Never know what he's doing in his corner.
What's who, me?
What's he doing in his corner?
Nothing. I was just moving to my seat.
Do you have crickets in your home?
No, my dog's snoring. That's about it.
We have more emails, Vince?
Yeah, we do. This one's not about an awkward laugh, but I thought it was good nonetheless. Last night I saw a homeless woman pooping against the side of a building on a fairly busy on a fairly busy street in Chinatown, and she was yelling at a cat to stop staring at her. Naturally, I thought of you guys. Sincerely, the best John.
Oh, yeah.
That's the greatest story of the night.
So yeah, I like that.
Do you think she was with her back up, like her back was leaning on the wall?
Like wall squats?
Yeah. Do you think that's what she was doing, Vince?
What's that?
Do you think her back was up against the wall?
Oh yeah, she was definitely
doing wall squats.
Definitely working the quads.
That puts a lot more pressure on the legs.
Wow, just pooping out in public. I think I'd have a really, really hard time with that. Although when you're a hobo and it's dark out, you're probably intoxicated. So it makes it easier.
I think I'm way too proud to be homeless.
I don't know.
There's a lot that comes with it that I wouldn't be able to handle.
Yeah, there's a lot that comes with it that I wouldn't be able to handle.
A lot of baggage.
No, because you just have a stick with a little bundle in it.
Yeah, come on, bro.
No, but a baggage because, you know, you got the cart full of...
I would have a cart full of so much. I'd have a flat screen on my cart.
Yeah.
My cart would be legit. All
right, we got another one. This one's from an Australian, and he wants me to read it in an Australian accent.
Your Australian accent's pretty good, though.
Hey, frauders. Emailing from the land down under, filled with AFL, donkey punching and bad Buddhist jokes, so feel free to do your Aussie accent so I can cry a little inside. My awkward laugh moment comes from the Ashton Kutcher movie The Butterfly Effect. If you haven't seen the scene, it involves a bully kid ready to set little Ashton's dog on fire while it is tied in a bag. Just before he does, little Ash's fat friend stabs the guy in the back with a piece of metal. My friends and I started laughing while the rest of the audience looked at us horrified, thinking we were like children being stabbed. It was a fat kid. Also, later on in the same movie, Ashton runs down the hallway very comically. Love the frotting and the people involved, especially fake Brett.
Was that Tim Mike?
Love always, David.
God damn it. Did Tim Mike not email us?
But I like that he was laughing because it was a fat kid being stabbed.
Yeah, that's funny.
I guess.
You don't agree?
Eh. It depends what he says.
I don't remember getting awkward looks, but I remember laughing really hard at the first scene in Expendables when they just started blasting everyone and like shooting people in half. That made me laugh really hard. I was there with my girlfriend, and she gave me a look like, why are you laughing so much? And I said, because it's really funny.
I was kind of hoping to laugh more in the Expendables.
Well, that was the beginning, and then it got really crappy.
Yeah.
And then I got sad.
Yeah. I went in hoping to be like, oh, this is going to be so dumb, it's funny. And then by the end, I was like, oh, this is just kind of sad.
Yeah, by the end, I was crying because I was like, what have these people become?
Yeah.
They've all, it's so sad. They just, Arnold and Bruce Willis have some stupid cameo. What has it become? Made me sad.
So what do you think about Van Damme and Norris being in the next one?
No.
Nick Cage.
And Travolta also.
What the fuck? I'm completely out on the Expendables.
And RuPaul.
and Martin Lawrence and Chris Tucker. They might as well just have every person you've ever heard of, basically from Hollywood, just at least make a cameo. All
right, so last few emails. Jordan sent us a really good story, but we don't have time to read it. Maybe I'll save it for next week. But Brian has a question. When you guys dump, do you look at the tissue after wiping? How about smell it? Do you ever do that? I definitely look at the tissue.
Smell it. You can already smell it.
Yeah. I definitely can smell it without putting it.
Yeah, don't put it near my nose to smell it.
But I definitely take a look. Well, first of all, I got to know what's going on out of my butt.
Yeah, well, first of all, you got to see if you're done wiping yet.
Well, yeah, I know that I'm not done, but even on the first one, I'm just like, all right, you know, what's coming out right now?
Yeah.
But then, yeah, you know, after a couple of wipes, like, all right, am I done? Because I don't nair my butt like some other guys I know. So sometimes it gets a little caught up in the hair.
Hey, some people like to dabble in butt nairing, okay? it's not a way of life.
Some people like to live.
Some people like to live, some people like to poop, and some people like to butt nair.
Burnsy, I love you as always. We got to get to our interview of Eddie Lee, a.k.a. Eddie Lee Sausage from Shut Up Little Man. I got a nice little interview for you guys.
That's good. I got to go to sleep.
Yeah, cool. You do.
Burnsy, thanks for letting us in your corner once again.
Thanks for having me once again.
I like it there. It's hair-free.
All right. Oh, it's hair-free because the nair?
It is a bit twinkish.
It's a little slimy, I got to tell you.
He's getting rainbows delivered ASAP.
Covered in vegetable oil.
All right. Well, fraudcasters or fraudicateers out there. Oh, goodbye, Burnsy. Thanks for listening. Fraudcast@gmail.com.
Oh, and just to set this up a little more. Yeah, the interview. I think Shut Up Little Man is out this weekend. I'll have to check on that. But yeah, should have a review coming up. Pretty cool documentary. Just check that out. And it's about.
Well, I guess we'll get to the interview and then we'll say goodbye.
Yeah. Oh, also for next week, if you got any relationship questions, I would really like to do a Fraudcast mailbag.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
A fraud bag.
Yeah. Relationship questions, sex advice, butt nairing, whatever you got, we'll do it.
Most. If you have specific questions about butt nairing, Vince, he had a pleasurable experience with it.
Well, I didn't do much trial and error, so I don't think I could do. Yeah,
the scientific method was not completely exhausted on that.
No,
it was a one and done.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's get your questions about butt nairing for next week specifically.
Ben really likes this. We'll have the whole crew back next week. So check out our interview, and good night and good chins. So I'm told you can talk to me a little bit about Shut Up, Little Man.
Yes, I can.
That's great. I just saw that recently, a few days ago. I really liked it. Actually,
good.
Yeah, we're all out here in San Francisco also, so, you know.
Wonderful.
A lot of the stuff was familiar. So I was just wondering, how long, so you guys made, you and Mitchell made these tapes in 1987, and then, how long was it before you discovered that they'd become, this whole, underground thing?
Yeah, so I think we started in 87, in November 87, and we moved out in May of 89. And I think I got a fellowship to go to grad school back in the Midwest. I was there, and I got a call in 1992 from Seymour Glass, shocking me by telling me that that everybody in San Francisco had been listening to the Shut Up, Little Man recording, unbeknownst to me and unbeknownst to Peter and Raymond, of course.
Did he give you any examples on how far it had spread or anything like that? What was the shock other than just hearing everybody's listening to these now?
No, that was the primary thing, was how is that even possible? Because the recordings were basically a private end joke between Mitchell and I and a very, very small circle of people. I'm talking less than 10 people, and then finding, getting a call from actually somebody who I deeply respected and who I eventually became friends with, which, this fantastic, really brilliant, editor and writer of this underground zine,
And that was, and so that was the Banana Fish?
Yeah, Banana Fish. Yeah. Have you ever seen that?
I have not. I feel like it sounds vaguely familiar, but I'm not sure that I've ever seen it.
Yeah. Brilliant.
So it was a few years you'd moved away and then you came back and then this was just a thing that started from just tape to tape, passing it around.
I think the nature of the material down at its very essence is so powerful, disturbing, provocative, darkly hilarious. But I think it's the kind of thing where, you play it and you, I think it's sort of like, man, this is outrageous. I can't just sit on it, It's sort of like when you hear a great band, and they're so good, you just want to share it with other people,
Yeah. I mean, when I was watching it, one thing, the director seemed to be preoccupied with this question of whether the tapes were art. And I was just wondering, do you think that's even a relevant question?
I do think it's a relevant question. There are a lot of, the great thing about Shut Up, Little Man is that it provokes a lot of questions. And I think Matt, the director, very successfully probes them, in a short film, right? An 85-minute film, you can only do so much. And I think he did a lot. But I think one of the questions is it art? And to us, being elementally creative people and having, throughout our history, at least I can speak for myself as an artist, I was always interested in elevating everyday life and found material into the level of art. I like Dadaism and, people who took garbage and turned it into art, And so in a way, this was just, another example of that. And I think Matt, as a film director, in his style in his previous two films, I think he's got a similar aesthetic where he goes out and finds found stock footage and melds it with dialogue, in his previous films too. So it seemed like a good marriage.
Yeah. It seemed like they were history. You don't get many opportunities to hear people, yelling at each other when they're not conscious of being recorded, and you get this weird window into their life without them expecting it to be, when you go back and look at history, it's like you don't hear people just talking to each other without expecting it to be recorded. It's mostly people intending for things to be written down, and it seems like that changes the whole dynamic.
Yeah, there's a lot. I think that's a really good spot. That your question is, or your, the point you're making is an excellent jump off point, because for Shut Up, Little Man, because it's sort of like, first of all, they actually did know they were being recorded at times, and mm-hmm. it didn't. I think the fierce passion that was down in their antagonistic dynamic, like, it just was so raw and intense, it just transcended, you know, caring, you know, yeah. on one level. On another level is that it's not often, I think, that we get to see something. I think Shut Up Little Man, as a bunch of field recordings, kind of stands out because it's so raw and unadulterated, and everything is so worked over and thought and overmanaged, you know. I think the authenticity in the recordings is part of what makes it so compelling.
Yeah, I was noticing in the press notes the editor was sort of relating it to reality TV a little bit, and I don't know, I thought it just seemed like it was very different just from the way that those things come about, you know.
I mean, right, exactly.
Yeah, it was much more unfiltered. Also, in the press notes, someone called it, you know, what happened with the film projects, a Hollywood feeding frenzy. And I was just wondering, I mean, how would you describe the process when you guys had like the three different film projects at the same time all competing?
You know, my take on it was I didn't really care. I didn't care what happened because the thing was always been such a haphazard, accidental thing that whatever came out of it was going to be okay. And I know in the film it looks very intense and there's a lot of antagonism there. But we were actually a lot more, well, our party was super relaxed about it because, first of all, it is our story. We did make the recordings, and a lot of what we were trying to do, a lot of what the producers and directors and screenwriters were doing with what you know, when we had projects, where they were telling also our story as a parallel, you know, two young guys who, you know, like to drink, and next to two old guys who drank themselves to death pretty much, you know? Yeah. And so there was like a nice parallel there. And, you know, it was a moment. I mean, the film, because of the way film works, it looks like that this is the big, you know, and all narratives are driven by conflict, right?
Yeah.
You know, from Homer's Odyssey up to the thing that whatever just came out today, you know. It's like, so, you know, Matt focused on that. But it was a moment. I mean, that was like a 3-month period. Now, we're talking about 24 years of history,
yeah.
And that went on for 3 months, and those guys pissed off and went away, you know?
Yeah.
And so, it's slightly distorted because of the way that, because it's in the film. And, you know, Greg and I, who he calls me names and stuff, we're on speaking terms now, and everything's cool. So, you know, we email each other, and so it's sort of, it's a weird thing to watch the film again, because it's like, all that conflict and antagonism, you know, was like a blink of an eye, you know.
Yeah. If you had directed this documentary, would you have, are there different things that you would have focused on? I mean, what do you think was the most compelling part of this whole story?
Well, I think the most compelling part of the story is the elemental dynamic between Peter and Raymond.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I think you get a sense of that, you know. I things I would have done differently, Matt, I think very successful, to my great joy, he very successfully humanized Peter and Raymond. Because I think you don't get that from the recordings. You listen to the recordings, you're like, these guys are just raw barbarians. They're just barbarians, you know?
Yeah, but there's a humanity that comes through, it seems like, on a lot of the insults and the way they express themselves.
Yeah. That always always bothered me, that I was afraid like a Charlie Manson cult was gonna, like, you know, grow around Peter and Raymond. You know, I mean, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. Like, that their humanity wouldn't be taken into account. And so when we found out the thing was spread, it had spread as far as it had, you know, we went to find, I mean, I traveled across the country to find Peter and have a conversation with him, because ethically and conscientiously, it really disturbed me that we never, ever intended it to be a thing, a phenomenon, you know? And now all of a sudden, like, it's getting incorporated into books and plays, and people want to do films. And it really bothered me that people wouldn't get a multidimensional portrait of him. And then when I did interact with him, I saw what kind of shape he was in when we met him at the tavern. That really unsettled me and made me feel even worse about what was going on, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I noticed
because we went, you know, the next night we went to see, you know, Greg's play, and, you know, here Greg, you know, has them disemboweling each other and stuff. And it just, it seemed cheap, and it really, really depressed the hell out of me.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm happy about that.
That was interesting to me because, I mean, you guys seem to struggle a lot with the question of like whether you were exploiting these guys. And I wonder, I mean, what do you think if this had happened today? Because from my perspective, you know, being a guy who works on the internet and, you know, there's just like a million YouTube clips of, it's funny, actually, one of the clips that they used in the movie to show that people's, to show YouTube as opposed to, you know, you guys passing these tapes around. One of the clips they showed was this fight that happened on a bus in San Francisco. Right. And one of the other guys that's actually on this podcast with me was sitting in the background watching that fight go down that they filmed in the movie, which was interesting
live
to me.
Maybe?
Yeah, live, yeah.
You know, the question of exploitation, I think, you know, Matt really hammers away on that. And for me, it's a little heavy-handed in the film, and it's like incredibly moralistic. And I think that the Shut Up Little Man phenomenon and then how, you know, and what it means in broader culture and all that, I think those ethical questions really need to be answered. But if you go back to the elemental thing that, look, we made these recordings as a private in joke with no intention to, one, spread them around, ruin Peter and Raymond's reputation, if that's even possible, right?
Yeah.
And, or, you know, forget anything commercial about it, right? You know, for me, definitively, exploitation is you're deliberately making a decision to take advantage of someone, and that never happened in this case.
Yeah, I mean,
with
us. Yeah, it seemed like, I mean, from my perspective, it seemed like, I mean, these guys were having this argument that was essentially public at that point. I mean, when you could hear it, like, out on, so essentially at that point, you're kind of just recording public space, and then I'm not sure what responsibility you have to, you know, say anything but just that you're recording public space at that point.
You know, in California, that's actually that's the legality of it. And it was in an earlier version of the film, the one that actually, the rough cut that made it into Sundance, but it got cut out because, you know, you have to trim things down to less than 90 minutes. But anyway, was, you know, in California, and it's different state by state, but in California, if something is audible in public space, and trust me, these guys were audible for blocks. And they even, you know, even in the recordings that we continue to sell on shutuplittleman.com, you know, it's like Peter says in one of them, he said, "Oh, darling, for three blocks they hear us." I have people come up to me and say, "Oh, why aren't you guys fighting today?" You know, stuff like that. And you're like, so anyway, in California, if it's audible or video, you know, if it's, you know, you can see it in a public space or common shared space, you are legally allowed to record it. And, you know, the example I always give is the Rodney King video where Rodney King gets beat by the cops. The cops don't own that.
Right.
Rodney King doesn't own that. The guy who shot it owned it.
Right, yeah. Yeah, what is the, I mean, as far as how wide this went, like what is the weirdest place that you've ever seen a reference to Shut Up Little Man show up? I mean, because I didn't know about the tapes before this movie, which is, you know, part of the reason I liked it so much. But just reading some of the quotes, some of people's favorites quotes, I noticed that Peter says something about Abigail May, And yeah. I recognize that from a Patton Oswalt bit where he was. Where
oh, yeah, he used that. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that bit.
Yeah.
He's a big fan, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, I'd heard that. And because, you know, he was living in San Francisco in the early 90s, I believe, also.
Sure.
And so what's, I mean, what other places have you seen it show, references to it show up?
I mean, you know, I think the one that, you know, it's weird. It shows up in a lot of places. You know, somebody told me something about SpongeBob SquarePants, and I was like, yeah, I don't watch a lot of television, and I'm not like ideologically opposed to it. I just don't have a lot of time, you know, but
yeah.
So honest to God, I was like, all right, what if someone said, yeah, Shut Up Little Man, you know, is on SpongeBob SquarePants. I said, what? Come on, man. It's a kid's thing, right? Isn't it? Anyway, I popped it on, and I swear to God, the first one I watched, he goes in this whole thing about, where are the, you know, Peter, Ray says, you know, in the original recordings, Ray says, I'm going to call the police. And then, like, most normal people would be like, you know, if your roommate's saying that I'm going to call the police, like, you'd kind of be like, oh, shit, maybe I better calm down. And, you know, but instead, Peter, because their dynamic was so twisted, Peter on the recordings is going, well, where are they? Let's get them here. Come on, go ahead, call them. Where are the police? Where are they? I don't see the police, little man. He's, like, egging him on to call the police on him.
Yeah.
And so SpongeBob SquarePants, you know, had about 5 or 6 lines from Shut Up, Little Man on the first one I watched. And we were going to put that in the film, but, you know, Matt just felt like there was, that the point had kind of gotten across that it spread pretty wide. But the director and one of the producers of SpongeBob SquarePants are, you know, unabashedly huge Shut Up, Little Man fans, and they admitted to incorporating it into 5 or 6 episodes. For me, I read a lot. I'm a rare book dealer in mm-hmm. Seattle, and I was reading a William Gibson novel called Virtual Light, and it happens in the future, but part of it takes place in the Lower Haight.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the guys is walking down, the main character's Rydell, he's walking down the street, and this guy, this short guy rolls by him, and he says, if you want to talk to me, then shut your fucking mouth, which, of course, is a reference to, you know, mm-hmm. Ray's famous line, you know. So and I was reading that. I went, holy shit. <You
know? laughs> Yeah. Have you?
So it's a weird meme, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and you, were you, did you come back to the neighborhood? Oh, yeah, you did come back to the neighborhood for the movie. Was the neighborhood a lot different than you remember, or what was that like?
The strange thing is, you know, the Lower Haight kind of had a little bit of a, it was, you know, kind of on the ascendancy when I first moved there, but it really quickly went back to being, you know, very similar. You know, I have a friend who worked for Matt Gonzalez, and he's my best friend in the world, and he was telling me that's Matt Gonzalez when he was on the city council or working at City Hall, you know, that was his area, mm-hmm. the Lower Haight, and that it still had the highest violent crime and drug bust in the city. And so I thought, well, there you go. It's still carrying on the spirit of, you know, Peter and Raymond.
Yeah. Well, that was funny that you say that it was on the ascendancy and then it sort of backslid, because I had you guys' place was on Steiner and what was it, Waller?
No, yes, between the Waller and Haight.
Yeah, and I had my good friend moved into a place on Hayes between Steiner and Fillmore, which is sort of over there.
Oh, yeah, sure.
In the same neighborhood. He moved there like in 2006 or 2007. And it was sort of the same deal then, where it was like, oh, this is going to be all gentrified and blah, blah, blah. And then it immediately sort of didn't. And he ended up getting mugged like 2 or 3 times on the way, just on the way to his house over there. And yeah, it was interesting to see that it was so similar in 1987 as it is like 3 years ago.
It's true. You know, that has been traditionally an incredibly rough neighborhood. I mean, almost every, I got gang beaten one day. Almost everybody I know got robbed at gun or knife point. 2 of our friends were put in the hospital with double concussions.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
This is a really bad neighborhood, man.
So were you happy to move when you did, or was it just part of living
well,
there?
It's weird. That's a good question. I mean, I kind of got attached to that space and the kind of gritty, I've always been seduced by that grittiness, you know,
yeah.
The urban grittiness. And I really when Mitch and I decided, you know, we're going to move out, we both had kind of a sad spot in our hearts because we were really attached to, ironically enough, we were really attached to living next door to these obnoxious assholes. You know?
Yeah. And now it's immortalized.
It makes no sense, but, you know, life doesn't often make sense, you know?
Yeah. And so you say you're in Seattle now. You guys still sell Shut Up Little Man tapes, and you said you're a rare book dealer now.
Mm-hmm.
And you're still making music and things.
Yeah, I'm still. You know, I do a bunch of different things. I make music and I write, and I always have some kind of creative thing happening. But I make a living by selling rare books. I've been doing that for 20 years. And we do sell a very limited range of stuff. We sell T-shirts, the comic book that we made with Ivan Brunetti and a couple other pretty well-known comic book artists. And, of course, we sell the original recordings, which are now highly sonically spruced up. The original recordings were just sounded terrible because we made it on this horrible microphone plugged into a stereo. So, but we had a few engineers work on it. So we saw the original recordings too.
Yeah. And I was curious
how
you came up with, your Eddie Lee Sausage as a, stage name. Were you like an aspiring porn star at one point or?
No, it's a great porn name though.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen like when Chup Little Man played at Outfest, which is a great LBGT, you know,
mm-hmm.
Festival down in LA, and it also played at Frameline, which is the LBGT film festival in San Francisco. One of the young gay writers wrote something like, "Man, this guy's got a great gay porn name." You know, but in the mid to late 80s, I guess about 85, I'd been making music. I was in the punk scene in from 78 to 82. Had a punk band, put out a record and toured and stuff. And then music got kind of serious, you know, great bands like, you know, REM and Husker Du and bands like that. They were really great bands, but they were really earnest. And I remember being in a band and going, and we were sounded like, or Echo and the Bunnymen, bands like that, you know? And I remember just getting really frustrated and saying, you know, fuck this. Like, let's do a fake heavy metal band. And we were all like performance artists and totally into Dada absurdism. And we kind of lived a really crazy, absurd life, you know? So we had a band called Metal Blister. This is in a time when heavy metal was an absolute joke. I'm not sure it's still not a joke, but you know, you'd mention Aerosmith and Ted Nugent or something. People would just start laughing, you know? So we, in these new wave clubs, we came out totally stoically faced as a heavy metal band. And we created a whole mythology, and everybody changed their names, and my name was Eddie Lee Sausage. It was sort of like a David Lee Ross guy.
Yeah.
You know, I'd get up there without a shirt on, and I was the lead singer and right stuff, on. So that's where that came from.
Okay, well now that actually makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Well, I've taken up quite a bit of your time already. I appreciate you talking to me.
You bet. Thanks for your talk.
All right.
Bye-bye.